Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive. We love digging into the cybersecurity world, and you guys sent in a fascinating document all about data security. So that's what we're diving into today. We're talking core concepts, best practices, really the whole shebang.
Looking forward to it.
Now, it's one thing to have all the right security software and hardware right,
Yeah.
but this document, it goes deeper than that. It really highlights something I think a lot of us don't think about enough: the lifespan of our tech. Those little pop-ups, they're like, "Hey, your software's outdated." Yeah, what about that?
Yeah, it's interesting you should say that, because it's really a critical point,
Right.
So this document, it stresses the importance of knowing the end of life and end of support dates for all our tech.
So we're talking EOL and EOS.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, these dates, they're non-negotiable. Like, you really got to pay attention to them.
And I'll admit, I'm guilty of this myself. Sometimes I'm like, remind me later, especially when it's like 3 in the morning and I'm trying to get work done. Is it
Well,
really that big of a deal?
it is a big deal. I think a good analogy is like an expired fire extinguisher.
Oh, okay. I like this.
It might look fine on the outside. Like, you look at it, you're like, okay, it's good. But then when you actually need it in an emergency, it could fail.
Yeah, that's not a risk you want to take.
Exactly. And that's the thing with outdated technology. It might seem fine, but it's actually riddled with vulnerabilities. Like, hackers, they know how to exploit this stuff. And once a product hits that EOL or EOS state, it's like the manufacturer saying, good luck, you're on your own.
Wow, so no more security patches, no more support.
Nope, you're on your own.
Okay, that is a much more compelling reason to update than whatever software company is nagging me this week.
Sure.
This document also breaks down data security into three main states. I found this really interesting. We're talking data at rest, data in transit, and data in use. What's a good way to kind of visualize this? Is it like different levels of security clearance or something?
It's more like picturing data as this constant traveler on a digital journey.
I like that.
And depending on, where that data is on its journey, that's going to determine what kind of security measures you need to take.
That makes sense. So where do we start?
Well, let's start with data at rest.
Okay.
This is, data that's just chilling out on a storage device. Think like your hard drive, your SSD, even that, dusty old external hard drive you probably have lying around somewhere.
Yeah, we all have one of those.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So because it's just sitting there, it's a prime target. So we lock it down with encryption. The document, it specifically mentions AES 256. You familiar with that?
They've heard of it.
Yeah, so this is a type of encryption that basically it scrambles the data, turns it into this unreadable mess without the decryption key.
So unless you have the key, it's useless.
Exactly. And then on top of that, we've got access control lists. Those are like our digital bouncers. They decide who gets in and who stays out. And then, of course, backups. Always got to have backups.
Yeah, your digital safety net, right?
Exactly.
So backups, I get you're kind of spreading the risk. But it's interesting to think about how important encryption is even when that data isn't actively being sent anywhere. So what about when it is on the move? Data in transit, that to me sounds a little more vulnerable.
Oh, absolutely. Because now we're talking about data traversing networks. So think emails, file transfers, all of that.
Right.
Imagine like a postcard being passed from person to person,
Okay.
and anyone along the way could potentially peek at it.
Yeah, that's not good if it's sensitive information.
Not ideal. So how do we make sure that digital postcard is, sealed tight?
Right.
Well, we've got our bouncers again at the network level, those ACLs we talked about.
Right.
They're controlling which devices can even interact in the first place. And then encryption, it gets even more creative
Oh,
here.
really? How so?
So the document dives into three types: end-to-end, link, and onion. Have you heard of these?
I've heard of them, but I'd love to hear you break them down.
Sure. So end-to-end encryption, it's like sending that postcard, but it's in a tamper-proof envelope straight to the recipient. Only they have the key to open it.
So even if someone intercepts it along the way, they can't read it.
Precisely. Now, link encryption is a bit different. It's like passing that postcard, but each person along the way puts it in a new envelope before passing it on.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so it's encrypted at each stage of the journey. And then finally, we have onion encryption, and this is where it gets really interesting. Imagine that postcard, right? But it's wrapped in layers upon layers of
Oh,
envelopes.
okay, I'm picturing this.
And each layer can only be peeled off by a different intermediary,
Oh, wow.
making it incredibly difficult to trace back to the source.
So onion encryption is like if you really want to cover your tracks.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, it's the choice for, high security, often anonymous communication. Each type of encryption has its strengths and weaknesses. Choosing the right one really depends on what kind of data you're dealing with and you know where it's going.
So it's not one size fits all?
Exactly.
It's fascinating to think about how much goes into securing data at every stage of its journey. But there's one state, left, right.
Mm-hmm.
We've got data at rest, data in transit, and then there's data in use. So what happens when the data isn't just being stored or sent, but it's actively being accessed and used? Data in use. This sounds like we're getting to the tricky part. Like securing data at rest and in transit, those make sense to me. But data in use, that seems way more challenging.
Yeah, you're right. It can be, you know, because we're talking about data that's actively being processed by a system or an application.
So it's like, what? It's not just sitting there. It's not really traveling, but it's actively being used.
Yeah.
So how do you even begin to secure something like that? Do the same methods even apply?
Well, it definitely requires a bit of a different approach. The document mentions homomorphic encryption.
Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, that one sounds a little over my head.
Yeah, it's very complex. Basically, it allows computations to be performed on encrypted data, but without actually decrypting it first.
Whoa, so it's like figuring out what's in a locked safe without ever actually opening it.
That's a good way to think about it. It's some pretty next level stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely for the hardcore cybersecurity folks.
Right. But a much more common approach, one that you've probably even encountered, is role-based access control, or RBAC.
Oh, okay. So this is where it's like different users have access to different levels of data depending on, like, their job function.
Exactly. So, for example, like an accountant, they might need access to financial records, but they don't need to see all the customer data, right?
Right, right. It's like a need-to-know policy, but on, like, a system-wide level.
Yeah.
So even if someone manages to get into the system, they're still limited in what they can actually see and do.
Hmm.
Makes sense. Now, the document also mentioned DRM and DLP here, but it looks like it dives into those in more detail in a later section. Should we maybe jump ahead to those?
Yeah, let's keep this train moving. Good point.
Right. Efficiency is key, especially when it comes to cybersecurity. So this next part talks about scoping and tailoring, which honestly seem like pretty universal concepts.
Oh, absolutely. It's all about customization.
Okay, so how does that apply to data security specifically?
Well, think about, like, tailoring a suit. You start with, you know, a standard pattern, but then a good tailor is going to adjust it to fit you perfectly.
Oh, okay, I see where you're going with this.
Right, and security, it's the same way. A one-size-fits-all approach, it's just not going to cut it.
Because every organization is going to have its own unique vulnerabilities, different data it's working with, different systems, different levels of risk.
Exactly. So you have to tailor your security measures to your specific needs and your specific situation.
So you're not just throwing things at the wall and hoping something sticks.
Right.
You're making informed decisions based on, like, a solid understanding of what you're actually trying to protect and what you're protecting it from.
Exactly.
So then how do organizations actually go about this whole tailoring process?
Well, the document points to something called NIST SP800-53B. Are you familiar with that?
I am not.
So it's basically a publication that provides guidance on risk management and selecting the appropriate security controls for your specific organization.
So it's like a security checkup,
yeah,
for your entire, you know, digital infrastructure.
Exactly.
It's assessing your weaknesses, what kind of data you're handling, your industry, all of it.
All of that. And then importantly, any regulations that you need to follow.
Right. Because sometimes it's not just about what you want to protect, but what you're legally required to protect.
100%. It's like, think about, you know, the difference between choosing to wear a helmet when you go biking versus, like, it being required by law.
Right. Both are for safety, but one is a choice, the other one not so much.
Exactly. And in data security, there are a ton of regulations and compliance requirements.
Hmm.
The document specifically calls out PCI DSS.
Oh, PCI DSS, yes. I've definitely heard of that one, but I'll be honest, I don't know all the ins and outs.
So PCI DSS is a set of security standards specifically for companies that handle credit card information.
Oh, right. So if a company wants to do business and accept credit cards, they have to play by these rules or face the consequences.
Exactly. It's all about protecting that sensitive financial data.
Makes sense.
And then there's GDPR, which deals with protecting the data of individuals, especially over in the European Union.
GDPR, that's another one of those, you know.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. What is it? It gives people more control over how companies use their data, right?
Exactly.
So we've got these external standards that add a whole other layer of complexity to this whole thing. But it seems like they're really crucial for, you know, setting a baseline level of protection.
Oh, absolutely. They provide a framework that organizations can follow and help ensure that there's, you know, a more consistent level of security across different industries and different locations. But the important thing to remember is it's not just about checking boxes on a compliance checklist.
Right.
It's about understanding why these regulations are in place to begin with, and then taking the necessary steps to implement security measures that actually protect the data that's been entrusted to you.
It's like the saying, give a man a fish, feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, feed him for a lifetime. But in this case, it's more like, give a company a security standard, protect some data for a while. Teach a company about data security, protect everyone's data for the long haul.
I like that. That's a good one.
Okay, maybe I'm getting a little too metaphorical here, but you get the point. We've covered data at rest, in transit, and in use. We talked about tailoring our security approach, the importance of external standards. This document really is like the ultimate guide to data security. This deep dive is really comprehensive. We still got a couple of key concepts to unpack. Remember DRM and DLP. Let's dive a bit deeper into those.
Sure, great idea. DRM, which stands for Digital Rights Management, is all about protecting copyrighted digital content. Think of things like movies, music, ebooks, software, anything you can download or stream.
So it's basically the digital evolution of those you wouldn't steal a car warnings they used to put on VHS tapes, right?
Yeah.
Like trying to prevent people from copying and sharing that content illegally.
You got it. DRM uses all sorts of methods to control access and use and make sure that unauthorized copying and distribution aren't happening. It's a big concern for creators in the digital age.
Right, because if anyone can just endlessly copy and share a digital file, it really undermines the whole idea of ownership and, you know, creators getting compensated for their work.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also see how DRM might be a little frustrating from the consumer's perspective.
Oh, absolutely. You're right. There's a real balancing act when it comes to protecting intellectual property while still making sure that, you know, users have some reasonable freedom with the stuff that they, you know,
that they purchased. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Some DRM limitations can be really restrictive. Like some might limit how many devices you can use or even prevent you from making personal backups.
Yeah. No one wants to feel like they're, you know, renting access to something they thought they bought.
Yeah.
So, okay, so let's move on to DLP, data loss prevention. That one always makes me think of those spy movies where they're like smuggling top secret data out on a microchip or something.
Right. Well, DLP is definitely relevant to today's world where sensitive data can be transmitted so easily. It's a whole set of strategies and technologies designed to prevent that data from leaking out, whether it's intentional or accidental.
So if DRM is about protecting the actual content, DLP is more about protecting the raw data itself, regardless of what it is.
You got it. And it's not just about, like, you know, stopping malicious insiders. Accidental data leaks happen all the time. DLP uses things like data classification, monitoring user activity, controlling those access permissions we talked about, and even doing things like scanning outgoing emails for any sensitive information.
So it can get pretty sophisticated.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It often uses a whole combination of tools and policies.
So it's like having this really vigilant security guard for all your data, watching every exit and making sure nothing sensitive slips out. So is there like a key takeaway here for those of us listening who maybe aren't, you know, cybersecurity experts?
Absolutely. A big part of DLP is something called endpoint protection. And what this means is securing all the devices we use every day, our laptops, our smartphones, tablets, all of it. Things like using strong passwords, keeping your software updated.
The basics.
Exactly. And being cautious about what you're clicking on and what you're downloading. All of that is super important because a lot of data leaks, they start with those seemingly harmless devices we carry around with us all the time.
It's a good reminder that, you know, data security, it isn't just a concern for big companies. It's something we all need to be thinking about our personal digital lives, too.
Boy.
Now, the last thing this document touches on is something called a CASB, or a Cloud Access Security Broker. That sounds pretty intense.
It's a mouthful for sure. But yeah, CASBs are important, especially as more and more organizations move their data and applications to the cloud. You know, managing security in that environment can be tough. A CASB basically acts as a security checkpoint.
Okay, between what and what?
Between the organization's network and all of those cloud services that they're using.
So it's like the bouncer for the cloud, making sure that only authorized users and devices can get in.
Exactly. They enforce security policies, they monitor all that cloud activity, and they can even detect something called shadow IT.
Shadow IT, is that like the IT equivalent of a black market or something?
Kind of. It's when
Yeah.
employees use cloud services that haven't been officially approved by their IT department. Like, maybe someone just using their personal Dropbox account to share work files. It seems harmless, but it creates security risks because IT has no visibility into what's happening, no control.
Right, it's like creating a backdoor into the system without even realizing it.
Yeah.
Well, this deep dive has certainly given us a lot to think about, a lot of really useful information.
It really has. And I think what it all boils down to is that data security, it's not just one thing. It's this multifaceted challenge that requires a combination of the right technologies, the right policies, and user awareness.
Right, we can't just assume that our data is just automatically going to be safe. We have to be proactive, we have to stay informed, and we need to be ready to adapt our approach as technologies change and as the threats evolve. I think it's safe to say that this document that we've been digging into, it's a fantastic roadmap to understanding these core concepts of data security.
I agree. It's definitely a valuable resource for anyone who's looking to learn more about this critical topic.
Well, thanks for diving deep with us today. Until next time, everyone, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep your data safe out there.